News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. Quick reminder, Alabama fans, we've got Nick Saban in town tonight for Team Focus. That's Mike Gottfried's organization for kids without dads, and so we'll be raising money for Team Focus. I think everything's, you know, if you don't have a table or a seat now, you're out, but because I believe it's a sellout again. It's going to be at the Riverview Plaza downtown. I'll be emceeing the event, so if you're an Alabama fan, already got your ticket, I'll see you there tonight, 7 after 8 o'clock.
You should hand Saban a Pepsi right when he gets there, kind of welcome him to the area.
Pepsi in a Georgia jersey.
Yeah.
I don't think that'll go over too well.
I don't think so.
Quinn Hillier, QuinnHillier.com, and the Washington Examiner is our guest this morning.
That's right. Quinn, good morning. Thanks for coming on with us.
Good morning, guys. Always glad to join you all.
Sir.
It's kind of hard to believe, but we're just over a month away from the Alabama primaries. I think 35 days remaining. And, you know, at the very beginning, we have two major races in the state, of course, for the soon-to-be vacant seat that's occupied by Senator Richard Shelby and has been occupied for decades. That's a big-time race for Senate. And then, of course, the gubernatorial race. And initially, both of those races seem to have been settled very early on. It seemed like Mo Brooks would be the next senator and Governor Kay Ivey would win re-election. Now, one of those has completely been turned on its head, and you hear people talk. It also seems like the gubernatorial race, like maybe there's a chance we get a runoff. Quinn, you wrote about one of these candidates recently on Washington Examiner, Lou Burdett, but before we get into his story, what's kind of been your overall take on this race that seemed almost predetermined for Ivey?
The overall take on this race is that it has been an embarrassment to the state of Alabama. Most of the candidates are running just either nasty or irrelevant campaigns. Nobody is talking about anything that has to do with real issues, especially state issues. Everybody's trying to talk about national stuff that has nothing to do with Alabama, or they're running these, you know, folksy ads like the governor is doing. I mean, how many different Alabama folksy things can Kay Ivey do before you start getting insulted rather than charmed by it? Tim James is doing nothing but tearing people up, going negative, just like he did 12 years ago when he ran, and he ran such a horribly negative campaign that he dropped out of what seemed like a certain runoff spot. Lindy Blanchard, every word out of her mouth is Trump, 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 even though it has nothing to do, again, with local stuff. So I'm embarrassed by it, and people need to get serious. We have real issues in the state forensics lab, state police, state crime, mental health. Go right on down the list, and nobody's talking about the real issues.
Now, one guy that you think is a little more genuine, maybe a lot more genuine than some of the others, at least the way that he is campaigning, would be pretty much a long shot, Lou Burdett. But you did actually attend an event where he was, and you were impressed.
Well, yeah, and no, look, this is not an endorsement. I still need to look into the guy. But first of all, he comes across well. He comes across as sincere. He's not the most issue-focused person, but when he does talk about the issues, he seems like he studied them, and everything he said I agree with. But if you guys haven't heard this backstory, first of all, who he is professionally, he's the one who took Books A Million public from a private little small book outfit into a publicly listed stock company, and then after that, for 19 years, he's run King's Home, which is a home for abused women and children trying to escape their abusers. So that's pretty impressive in itself. But have you guys heard his story about what happened to him when he was 15 years old?
Yeah, he was assaulted. I can't remember the exactly what happened, but wasn't he thrown down a well and
assaulted on his way home from work?
Working at his dad's grocery store, and walked out into the alley to his car when he got off work one night, and two people kidnapped him. They literally took him at gunpoint, put him in the car, said they were going to hold him for ransom for $250,000. He said, my dad's a grocer. You know, you don't have $250,000. They say, okay. So they drive him out to the country, make a much longer story short. They hit him on the back of the head with a gun, gash his head. Then they stab him. I think it was one time in the front, three times in the back. Then they throw him down a well. Then they throw a bunch of stuff on him to try to bury him. Then they start shooting into the well, shoot four shots, one of which hits the back of his head and lodges in his jaw where it still is today. And they drive off and leave him for dead. And then he starts saying Bible verses. And much longer story short, it's a 30-foot well, and he keeps finding little handholds, not man-made handholds, just little handholds in the side of the well, and bleeding his guts out. He climbs out of the well, crawls on his belly for 2 hours, and finds a house, and knocks on the door, and then I won't even ruin the rest of the story, because even then it gets more amazing, but basically they got him to an ambulance, they got him to a doctor, the doctors told his parents there's less than a 10% chance that he'll live. Wow. And 2 weeks later, he walked out of the hospital.
Yeah, it's an astounding story, really. And then, so he's now turned his life in the last 2 decades to helping others, too, right?
To helping others. I mean, he's running this thing called King's Home, again, for abused women and children, trying to get them a new lease on life after they've been horribly abused, by husbands, fathers, who went bad. And he's done that, and that's after being a very successful. He was the chief operating officer for Books A Million, of course, national company based here in Alabama. So, again, I'm not endorsing the guy. I need to look more into him, but he's at least not running a campaign of either total negative or total irrelevance. I'd literally never heard of him other than seeing him as somebody who qualified. I didn't know who he was until 10 days ago. But he's a kind of long shot that at least deserves to be paid attention to. And that's my bigger point, is it's time for everybody to really start paying attention to this race, demand debates. Don't vote for candidates unless they talk about real issues, and get serious, Alabama. This is important.
Yeah, and one of the lines you just said, that you didn't know who he was till 10 days ago, that's obviously his forefront issue right now, mm-hmm. as well as some of these other candidates. And they have some of this fundraising, some of these statistics out from the first quarter, and Burdett, way behind the cash-strapped candidates in Ivy and James and Blanchard. But, you know, when we post things on Facebook and look at the text line and have a poll on our site, I'm surprised when we've done that at kind of the following that Burdett actually has. He has quite a few people in this area who are excited about his campaign. During your kind of your discussion with him and learning more about him, what did you find that Burdett, does he stand for anything that is that sets him apart from the crowd as far as policy or anything like that?
I don't know that he is that different on policy, other than, you know, when he does talk about policy, he doesn't talk about irrelevant national stuff. He actually talks about state issues, which, you know, somebody needs to tell Lindy Blanchard that she's running for a state office. Look, he showed at least, you know, the basics that conservatives around here would welcome. He's for school choice as long as it's within limits. But he's for school choice. He's against Common Core. That's preaching the choir for me. He said that he's, you know, of course he's against tax hikes, and he goes down the line. And he actually brings up mental health, that we need to improve our mental health care. Nobody else is talking about that, but it's a very important issue, and it shows that he understands, you know, the combination of mental health and drug abuse. So again, nothing that new or different, but at least he's talking about this.
I will say, if you get a chance, Sean Sullivan talked with Lindy Blanchard, I believe it was Friday on Midday Mobile. Mm-hmm. It was late last week, and I actually kind of came away impressed with this most recent interview, Quinn, if you get a chance to listen to
that.
Not
okay,
saying
because, I mean, I'm going mostly on her commercials,
what, her ads,
what I
yeah.
heard from her earlier in the campaign, where it didn't seem like she knew she was running for Alabama governor. It sounded like she was still running for, like, Secretary of State of the Nation or something.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it'll change, it'll earn your endorsement or anything like that, but I would check that out if you get a chance.
Okay, I will.
And I also want to get...
Again, I got to follow my own advice and actually start paying attention to these people and to this race because it's important.
And I also want to get your take here while we're talking about this race on low-hanging fruit. I mean, it's been basically the name of the game for this race. And the Governor Ivey ad that came out last week, the No Way Jose ad about border crossers mm-hmm. coming to Alabama and having to learn Spanish or something like that. I mean, the definition of low-hanging fruit there for voters. And I think Maxine Waters jumped on it on MSNBC over the weekend or something like that. But your take, not necessarily on what you would like to see in your perfect candidate, but as a candidate, as Governor Ivey running for re-election here, that low-hanging fruit, I mean, it's called that for a reason, right? That gets people to the polls and gets the vote, even if it's not necessarily the smoothest way to run a campaign. What's kind of your take on when candidates like Ivey go after these things that are, you know, red meat?
Well, they go after red meat even if they have nothing to do with anything. And then, of course, you know, what the heck is nothing too high for a high stepper
right.
or something?
No step,
you know,
too high.
And again, I don't know why people don't look at this stuff and say my intelligence has been insulted, because that's what she's doing, and that's what most of these candidates are doing, is they're insulting our intelligence by thinking we're so shallow that's going to move our vote. Now, maybe it does move votes. I mean, they got poll-tested stuff, et cetera, but... If you're worried about what teaching Spanish to border crossers from Texas, you know, that might be something. But is that more important than the fact that we have a state crime lab that is that's taking a year and a half to process forensics? I think not.
Yeah, and I think also when you talk about mental health, we need to get ahead of that for sure, because you can see what it's done for homeless populations in other cities and other states for sure. Quinn, we'll be back in just a moment. Sound good?
Sure, thanks.
We've got a few articles at quinnhillier.com, and we'll examine some of those.
And speaking of candidate Lou Burdette, Sean says he'll be on Midday Mobile today at 1 o'clock. So if you want to learn more about that candidate, Lou Burdette on Midday today.
Now, he's an outsider, obviously, but the last time we... elected an outsider as governor, we got the love gov where every day was Valentine's Day, so be careful. 20 minutes after 8 o'clock, FM Talk 106.5 with Dan and Dalton.
825 FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for listening to Mobile Mornings. Getting back to our conversation here in just a second. This segment of the show brought to you by Tobias and Comer Law. Experienced personal injury lawyers based right here in Mobile. They've been serving this area for decades. They've got compassion and a track record of success for making things right for their clients. At Tobias and Comer Law, they work each client's case personally from start to finish. They don't hand your case over to another lawyer that you don't know at some other law firm. And at Tobias and Comer, over their decades, have handled hundreds and hundreds of personal injury cases. They've recovered over $45 million for their clients and let them put their expertise to work for you. If you're wondering if you may have a case, you can call anytime for a free consultation, 251-432-5001, or visit them online at TobiasComerLaw.com.
Quinn, I haven't seen you write many articles of New Jersey federal prisons, but one made it into your columns this week.
Yeah, look, the Democrats, or at least the progressive wing of the Democrats, always like to claim that science is on their side, right? We're the party of science. You guys deny science, blah, blah, blah. And yet they're the ones pushing this radical transgender ideology that says that you are literally, not just, you know, figuratively whatever, you are literally whatever you decide you identify as. Well, if that's the case, how do they explain what happened in this prison? A biological male was housed in the women's maximum security prison because, of course, the person self-identified as a female and proceeded to impregnate two of the inmates.
Went back on her word.
Now, if you are a female, last I checked, you cannot impregnate other females. That's just biology.
Mm-hmm.
And this, and so that more than anything else I've ever seen, more than any other story, shows the flat-out lie behind this self-identity movement, especially if you haven't had the surgery. I'm sorry, people can be nice and call you a female, but you're not one.
Yeah.
And and other women should not have to put up with you in their showers, in their bathrooms, et cetera, whether it's in schools or in stadiums or wherever.
Yeah, a couple of the ladies doing a little more than putting up with the transgender prisoner there.
Mm-hmm. Happy to have them.
And another amazing stat from that story is how many transgender prisoners were in that one prison and are in there. I think there's somewhere around
27, I think it was.
Yeah, of 800. So what's the tipping?
Yeah.
27 of 800. So what's the tipping point there? When does New Jersey say, hey, we might have a problem here?
I think now that they've got two impregnated inmates, they might start to say, we've got a problem.
Hey, Mike Pence spoke at the University of Virginia. You had a quick article on that.
Yeah, look, excuse me for being so blunt, but the idiot editors of the Daily Cavalier, the newspaper on campus, you know, people are supposed to be for a free press. That's what the press is for. Wrote an editorial saying Mike Pence should not be allowed to speak on campus because his words threaten our very existence and our lives. Yeah, right. Okay, so Vice President Mike Pence, subject to, you know, predetermined cancel culture by the very people who should be saying we're for free speech. Well, anyway, the university told the students to get real, and Pence came and spoke, and it was a wonderful event. Just a very few protesters got, according to the Washington Post of all people, or of all outlets, got three standing ovations, got a lot of laughs, showed a lot of compassion. It was an absolutely perfect event, and those student would-be totalitarians get to go home with egg on their face.
Okay, well, good for them. And by the way, if people want to read more about what you've got, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, you can go to quinnhillier.com and push the subscribe button for free, and you don't give up anything for it. Or just Google my name and Washington Examiner, and you'll see my stuff almost daily. You can follow me at Twitter, at Quinn Hillier. That's easy. And I've got three books out, the Mad Jones series, available on Amazon.
Thank you, Quinn.
Thanks, guys.
That's Quinn Hillier, noted New Orleans Saint fan and columnist at WashingtonExaminer.com.
It is 8:30. Dan and Dalton, turning up your voice if you like. 251-343-0106. Also, to text line is coming along. Same number, 8:30 on FM Talk 106.5 on Mobile Mornings. Hey, y'all, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is 8:35. So I heard something on this morning with Gordon Deal during my ride back to home to get my phone. That only happens three times a week. Completely.
You need a like a wallet chain for your phone.
Yeah, I need it hanging around my neck. Like, what religion is that, Dan? It's not a religion. It's just my phone.
Just forgetful.
Yeah, I'm from the religion of forgetful. The story was, and so I Googled it here, and I thought I would find the story. Instead, what I found was a bunch of stories about Americans not returning to work, not returning, some of them, many of them. In the story on this morning, it was 3 million Americans are now in this kind of nest of people who, it started with COVID, and now it could be health, it could be paranoia, it could be maybe a lingering COVID that they've got themselves where they're still not well. Well, that would roll into health, too. It's people who simply, not you know, how we were so anxious to get back at it. And like this evening, a big event, 800 people. We had our Light of the Village thing a couple of weeks ago. John Eads and I talked about it in January. He said, do you think that we can have a crowd, that we can assemble a crowd and people will actually come to the event? And the Light of the Village event was in late March, and that was one of the first big events that I've been at where people are seated and having a dinner. So the question is, and who are these people that are 3 million or so strong? And there's a variety of reasons, but it's so strange. And, of course, the economy gets hurt when people don't go back to work, obviously. Right. So you've got these they're choosing to stay on the sidelines. Most of it's got to do with COVID.
Yeah, and COVID was more, I think, than just, you know, a virus. I think it kind of was a shift in the culture in a lot of ways. And, of course, the first thing that a lot of people will bring up, including me right now, is the federal government. You know, they spent a lot of money and sent a lot of that money out and made it less desirable in a lot of cases for folks to go to work. And,
no doubt.
You know, even though when we, like yesterday, talked about the Alabama, the latest numbers for unemployment at 2.9% for March and how that tied a record low. Well, then you look at the actual labor participation rate, and Alabama was like 43rd, I think, in the country, somewhere around 57% labor participation rate. And so the unemployment number does not include people who have taken themselves out of the job market.
Yeah.
When you hear 2.9%, those are people who are actively looking for jobs. Well, a lot of people have kind of, you know, stepped away from that for one reason or the other. And I think there's also, you know, one of the first things I thought when I heard that as well this morning was, what about deaths? How many people are like no longer with us because of COVID from when you think work was quote unquote normal until we went into the COVID phase and a lot of people lost their jobs and a lot of people stayed home. A lot of people went and worked remotely. You look at the stats and they say, you know, right around 1 million Americans have died of COVID. And, you know, you can argue whether COVID was the reason mm-hmm. or not, but regardless,
I've never heard of that argument. Really?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that make that argument. But
okay.
Regardless, you know, there were more people that died
yeah.
in the last couple of years than there had been year to year
probably
prior.
COVID related, right.
But it doesn't seem like that is a major shift in the job market either, because so many of those people were already elderly
right.
and not working. Another, I think, factor in this, people are kind of working on their own in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. They're starting their own online businesses. Maybe they're selling things online or they've used this opportunity to begin their own small business, as so many have had to close down around the nation. But it's really interesting, and that'll be a great kind of study as we go over these next few years, why exactly the shift in what people consider a day-to-day job anymore. You look at the labor participation rate for the entire country, and back in the beginning of the pandemic, April of 2020, we dipped to a 60.2% national labor participation rate, which means 38.8% of, I believe the number is working age adults. I don't think it's like all American population. I think 38.8% of working age adults, 39.8% of working age adults were not working in April of 2020. But the highest we've been in maybe ever was back in 2001. And even then, there was only a 67.2% labor participation rate. So we've since rebounded. We're up nationally to about 62.4%, which is still a full percentage and a half from where we were pre-pandemic. But if you think a full percentage and a half of the American working age population, and that's probably pretty close to that mm-hmm. 3 million just off the top of my head that you mentioned there.
Yeah, and so this is more of a, if you listen to the story, it was kind of strange. It was almost like they have adopted the COVID lifestyle from here on out.
Right.
Like they've signed up not going to restaurants anymore, period. Not going to a ball game, anything like that. Not seeing friends and neighbors. Just staying completely socially and certainly work-wise on the sideline It's almost like it's almost like it affected their mind or their brain. Like they've got some sort of a mental illness or an anxiety of going outside for whatever reason, or a host of reasons like their own health.
I bet a surprising and scary amount of people who are still just absolutely 100% terrified, and it's the same people. A lot of the media, and maybe it's online or something like that, that have this like perfect algorithm to get people scared out of their minds. Whether it's Trump's taking office, we're about to be in a World War III, everybody's going to die. You had people completely losing their minds. This pandemic comes around, and there are still people that will scream at you for not wearing your mask.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's insane. We don't see much of that around here, but certainly in some of the very far left cities, you'll see people that their lives must be miserable.
This mask mandate being shot down by the judge in Florida is going to drive some people absolutely crazy.
I'm sure.
Duckman says, Dan, you forgot about the vast majority of those who don't want to work anymore. Lazy. I'm sure that has something to do with it. Yeah, lazy. I get it. It's just, this is the first time I heard it laid out where you actually have these people who are, it doesn't seem like laziness is the culprit here, though laziness has played a part in this for the whole dang time we've been in it, right? You know, COVID is terrible, it's scary, I don't want to get out. And then, you know, we've turned a few corners and then kind of gone backwards with the rates. But for the most part, we've been more than hopeful down here in Alabama and been out and doing our thing. This is just a mindset of people that have decided, I'm not going to, that's weird.
I'm done.
Yeah. I'm resigning from life as I knew it. This is now my life. That is crazy.
And aside from the mental health side effects, you really don't need to go anywhere anymore. The way this economy, I mean, you can have groceries delivered to your
door.
You can have everything done without stepping foot outside the house. And I think there's also a huge portion of the population who have serious mental health issues that make them like incapable of holding a job or going out and making friends or doing anything. And we haven't really talked about that much. You know, everyone talks about when all the mental health institutions were kind of shut down around the country. Was that during Reagan that happened? Something like that? Maybe. I can't recall when it was, but you see, our prisons fill up with a lot of people who would traditionally have gone into more of a mental health care setting. And I think a lot of people are just, you know, and no fault to them in a lot of the cases, but we have a huge mental health issue in the United States.
So, all right, let me throw out a theory here, just out of my backside, okay, to be honest with you. But we kept talking about people with underlying health issues.
Right.
They need to be very careful. So COVID was affecting those with underlying health issues. Did we take into account those with underlying mental or anxiety or emotional issues and what this was going to do to them?
Yeah.
And now you have them maybe being in a zone that they're a little more comfortable with. Again, I'm just throwing it out there. But what did it do to those with underlying mental conditions? And I don't know that that was that's ever been a tier one discussion.
Well, we've talked about it. I mean, we're on this station. Yeah,
we're brilliant.
Yeah, we've talked about the mental health effects.
We have
keeping kids home from school.
Right,
they can't go out and see their friends. And then even, I mean, I can't imagine. And I'm so fortunate to work at a place like FM Talk 106.5, where you know we never stopped coming in.
During the
pandemic. But
you had COVID five times.
But I mean, I can't imagine, and I can't imagine not seeing people, you know, in person. Like, the online life is just not one for me. And really, I don't think it's for most human beings.
Right.
You got to get out and at least, you know, make some eye contact and talk to people and you know, put your fears and things out there so that somebody can respond. And I think it made a lot of mental health issues worse, this pandemic, and the nonstop fear porn coverage of it. And then it also introduced a lot of mental health issues into the population with people that were probably fine pre-pandemic. And there's a million texts we've got here. This says, don't forget, there's a boatload of PPP fraud where folks are getting $20,000 tax-free and filing again. You can file for an LLC over and over again and get... Yeah, there was a whole lot of fraud, that's for sure. Grant says, you know what you don't see anymore? The old lady, 76 years old, at Walgreens behind the register, holding up the line because she can't keep up with the pace of technology. Oh, Grant, I don't know what Walgreens you're going to. I still see that at mine, holding up the line. But that's also, you're right. There's some of these jobs are either now automated or they are too difficult for a lot of people to even to do for anymore.
On older generation, you're talking about?
Let's see. Phil says, I know from two friends that hire all of the IRS refunds folks are getting, and these are folks who didn't work before and received a boatload of child tax credit and still filed taxes and got a higher refund. WTH. Yeah, I mean, for a while there, each payment for each child you had was around, I think it started at $600 and then the next few were at $1,200 a child.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have, and I think there was some kind of cap on it, if I remember correctly, but if you had five kids, I mean, there you go. That's $6,000
for sitting on your couch.
Coming in for, yeah, and probably didn't spend all of that on the kids, I would say. So Sean says people don't even grocery shop anymore. Half the people in Walmart are employees with those big blue cart stands shopping for people that bought online. Yeah, you've just it's everything's been outsourced now. And Milton here says, let's see. We'll get to maybe that after the break, but
okay.
A bunch of texts to get to here.
Yeah. Just, you know, the mental health of even us, you and I, and everybody that forged on in the middle of all this, still, we talked about it on the air. It was hard to do our job. It was hard to come in every day to FM Talk 106.5, and I'm looking around shopping centers on my way here. Everything shut down. Looks like it's all going out of business. Now, some have bounced back, but it's been a depressing time. It's 849 FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton, again, the text line. You got a lot there that we can look at, and we'll do that. And maybe also go to the phone line at 251-343-0106. It's going to tell Quinn when we were talking about the governor's race, when, as Jeff likes to call him, so funny yesterday, rootin' tootin' Tim James comes out guns a blaring. Anyway, when he was on the Jeff Poore show a month ago, or, you know, when he announced, he wasn't even clear on the Bay wage. I mean, he's calling a Mobile radio station, talking about, I want to be governor of the state.
Yeah.
He really didn't have his facts together about the Bay wage, but I thought, found that interesting. By the way, for governor, we've got two of the candidates for governor on this same radio station here today. Gubernatorial candidate Dean Odle at 9:30 with Jeff Poore, and then later on today on Sean Sullivan's
show. Yeah, 1 o'clock, Sean will have Lou Burdett on, who you just heard Quinn wax poetically on. Lou Burdett coming on at 1 o'clock, and Dean Odle at 9:30. And also on Jeff's show today, he'll talk with a couple of ladies from the Eastern Shore Republican Women's Club, Judy and Melinda. And then in the third hour, Ray Mellick with 1819 News joining Jeff on the Jeff Poore Show. So looking forward to that. And also going to get to the text here in just a second. This segment brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Crew ran in this here town by Trey Bennett, and they are local. And everyone, I think everyone, I need to go poll everyone here at the station, but I believe almost or everyone has used 1-800-GOT-JUNK at some point.
Well, have you been to any of the homes that of the people of the station?
So clean.
Junk all over
the place. Yeah, no, so junky.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, it's so clean.
Yeah,
That's what I meant.
They're clean after 1-800-GOT-JUNK got out there, and they make junk disappear. That's what they're great at. I've got a stack here of customer reviews, and all of them so positive, and many of them echoing the same sentiment that you make your appointment and some very friendly employees from 1-800-GOT-JUNK will call before they get to your house. They'll give you an estimate that does not contain any surprise charges after the fact. Like, they won't tell you it'll cost this, and they get done with the work and say, oh, by the way, it actually costs this. That's not what happens when you use 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and they'll come to your place of residents or business, and they'll do it with a smile on their face. So give them a call today. 1-800-GOT-JUNK is the number, and online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
By the way, the Russian ambassador to the U.S., I've got to talk about this story tomorrow. It's kind of funny. He feels like he's getting frozen out by Washington, D.C. Not only so like all nobody on the playground will talk to him,
right?
But also, Putin hasn't talked to him in years.
Yeah, but his response was kind of good and it kind of made sense. He said, "Why? So you guys can spy on us?"
Well, that was
But you know, they could have a conversation without.
Come on, a secure line somewhere. Putin has not talked to the man, I think, in 4 years. He's the ambassador. it's kind of funny.
It is. Pretty good. Tony says the liberal government did the best they could to make this a socialist society, and it worked in some respects. It'll never be the same again. He said, I, on the other hand, worked like never before through all the COVID crap. And a lot of people, a lot of smart business people, men and women, used this as an opportunity and were able to help themselves by really working hard through the pandemic. I mean, Sean had on Scott Blair on Friday, who runs 2U Tires and a number of other projects, and he said once the pandemic hit, I mean, business was heavier than it had ever been for him, and that's the case for a lot of people. At the same time, many people lost their jobs, whether they worked at restaurants or in certain stores that had to close.
They were. I've talked to business owners who were almost sheepish in talking about, almost felt guilty to say, "You doing okay?" You know what they say, Dalton? We're doing great.
Yeah.
Like the drive-thru is bonkers. We're making money like never before. Like a local owner of a number of chicken, you know, fast food chicken or whatever. It was like, we are doing just fine. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Some really came out on top and some got burned by it.
Yep.
This was a really interesting thing. And maybe we'll get into this more tomorrow when we talk about the Russian ambassador. But war in space seems to be becoming ever more a reality every single day. The Biden administration will implement a self-imposed ban on all anti-satellite weapons testing. They say it's to take the lead in highlighting what they say are the dangerous and irresponsible Russian tests in space, which have lately created a potentially disastrous field of space debris. So, you know, this is also a PR move by the U.S. China's also been accused of similarly reckless anti-satellite missile testing. NBC reported yesterday that a briefing provided to Congress indicates the move is to address the, quote, most pressing threats to the security and sustainability of space, as demonstrated by Russia's 2021 November destructive missile test, anti-satellite missile test. And Russia came out and said that this was all propaganda from the U.S., but that's kind of the era we're headed in, right? Is shooting these GPS satellites out of the sky because they just launched another surveillance satellite over the weekend from California, U.S. surveillance satellite. These are so important to what's going on the ground day to day in Ukraine. That's how they're able to tell Ukraine about so much of this information they have with the war that's going on there. But how strange will that be? Where they're going to be reporting on soon countries shooting other countries' satellites out of the sky. And when does that become an act of war? Strange new world.
You knock out my SEC network. You've never seen me that angry. It's what just happened? Yeah, 859 FM Talk 106.5 Dan and Dalton and Jeff Ford on the way next.